And Barry, as always, thanks so much for the time here. We were chatting yesterday for a hot second and a little bit before we came on the air here that you got the chance to see a lot of the players and the coaches one last time after yesterday's game. Can you dive into the emotions that everybody was feeling after a tough one out there at Schoelkopf?
Well, first off, Nick, thanks for having me on. It's always great to have two ex-Ithaca Bomber radio grads talking sports. In this case, Cornell Sports. Yeah, they have a post-game reception, both on the road and more specifically here at home after games for Cornell Lacrosse up at the Hall of Fame room. And this one was, as you'd expect, very somber, bit quiet. Parents, players, particularly some of the fifth-year seniors who won't be back, the senior class, some who may still be back due to the COVID missed year. But somber times, but at the same time, a group of guys that pretty much have left the program better than they found it. And I didn't get to talk to every one of them because I don't have, you know, a personal relationship with every one of the players. But there are a handful of guys that I spoke to. And there's just still tremendous pride while disappointment, losing to arguably the hottest team in the tournament right now in Michigan, a sense of what this group accomplished, having a lot of them in coming back for a fifth year due to COVID, wiping out the Ivy season 2 years ago. Just a lunch pail, blue-collar group of guys represented the program well. There were some that still just couldn't believe it was over. And some tipped their cap to Michigan because, quite frankly, you were at the game with myself as well. Michigan earned this win. This wasn't a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. There were 4 one-goal games in the tournament in weekend number one, and this was one of them. So I think for the seniors who are graduating, they can hold their heads high. Some, like Gavin Adler, will go on to play professional lacrosse. Some others may have other types of opportunities, but they represented the university with pride, with class, and they'll look back at these years as probably the best of their lives, lifelong friendships. I say this to a lot of people when I'm interviewed. A lot of schools in different sports talk about the great traditions they have there. When you get to the BCS level, it's at a different type of tradition. Cornell lacrosse, across the spectrum, is unlike any other athletic team tradition. When you sign up to play for the Big Red as a freshman and you make it through your 4 or sometimes 5 years, you are a Big Red lacrosse player for life. You're part of a fraternity that's lifelong membership. And I just feel privileged, like a lot of people, to have been around these guys for the last 4 to 5 years.
I wasn't going to go in this direction, but since you bring that up, I want to go there for a couple of moments about how you're a Big Red player for life. And we were talking before we came on the air here, too, that here in the NCAA tournament, there are so many people with Cornell and Ithaca ties out there doing their thing. It's almost like if you are a part of the Cornell lacrosse family, you get this unbelievable education in lacrosse that helps you do some really wonderful things out there. Can you take the listeners through all of that? Because it's really, really remarkable when you think about it.
Well, you know, you talk about the influences. The first one is symbolic. Beaming down from heaven yesterday certainly was Richie Moran, his son Ryan, his grandson Ryan. I know you guys have carried Ithaca high lacrosse games in the past. Ryan still in the tournament with Kyle Georgialis, associate head coach at Army. He was a former captain under Jeff Tambroni when he coached at Cornell. Jeff Tambroni, those two teams will meet in the quarterfinals next weekend. John Tillman, who, of course, was the national championship coach last year at Maryland, he played under Richie Moran. Former coaches Peter Milliman and Jeff Tambroni, they're still coaching in the tournament. And, of course, Ben DeLuca, how about Delaware, gave Duke all they could handle in the tournament. So, you know, you do the arithmetic. You've got 4 coaches. You've got 3 ex-players, and you've got 1 current player with Cornell ties in Ryan Sposito. So the influence of Cornell lacrosse is just profound, and it's playing out over the next couple of weekends in the tournament.
It's remarkable. All right, I do want to go back to yesterday and what we saw out there on the field. What were your initial reactions and thoughts to yesterday's game and how everything unfolded?
Well, there's going to be a lot of debate, particularly on the overtime face-off and Jack Cascadden, Cornell's outstanding freshman face-off specialist, who went up against the top-rated face-off unit in the country in Michigan. They were winning close to 62% of their draws. I thought he had a great opportunity to go to the cage. I know a lot of people, and it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback, which they do, at any level of sports participation. I think, you know, knowing Jack, knowing his bloodlines, his dad, a former NFL linebacker with the Jets, he just had the mentality, I've scored earlier, I can do it again. Obviously, the shot on goal that the goalie saved, and it turned out to lead to the eventual winning goal in overtime. I'm not going to sit here on a radio show and say they should have done this, they should have done that, but Jack Haskaden's going to be back for 3 years. He gave Cornell an opportunity to win the game. On the flip side, you got to credit Michigan. Cornell's most important statistic to them is ground balls, and Cornell had just a one ground ball advantage, and that's huge because ground balls are extra possessions. They keep possessions alive. They get you the ball back to your offense or your defense, respectively. So I think Michigan neutralized Cornell at ground balls. They had a statistical advantage in faceoffs. And it was really, and when we talked after the game, it was kind of a storybook ending for Michigan. Here's Peter Thompson, who played 4 years of lacrosse at Georgetown, graduate student, born and raised in Ann Arbor, Michigan, ends up scoring, what, 4 goals in the game, including the game winner in overtime. But I think Cornell, you know, met a team that was as disciplined as they were, both offensively and defensively. And I just look at it back saying Cornell had their chances. They did a tremendous job, Michigan, on C.J. Kirst, who, of course, is one of the 5 finalists for the Tewaratawn Trophy. It was just a game, Nick, that you didn't want to see either team lose because it was so well played. I don't believe there was a single man up in the game. There were a couple of flags that got called off due to goals being scored when the foul occurred. It's just one of those games that somebody had to win, and Michigan made just enough more plays to get it done.
Barry Leonard with us here on BTL, the voice of the Cornell Big Red men's lacrosse team. What do you think made Michigan so good and so tough out there? Because I see the social media posts, I see the articles, people are calling this a really big upset. To me, it feels like it was a really great team that's figured it out, that was able to get the edge over another really good team that's always a perennial power.
Well, on top of the fact that their third leading scorer, Ryan Cohen, missed the game due to reasons that were not elaborated on by the university, but the point is they had a really potent attack equal to that, if not statistically, with better numbers than Cornell's attack, although numbers don't tell the whole story, but they won the game without their second or third leading scorer in Cohn. They just, you know, have a dominating face-off unit, and you just look at the run that they've been on, you know, the 2 straight wins over Ohio State, beat Jeff Tambroni's Penn State Nittany Lions, beat John Tillman's Maryland Terrapins. So this is a team for real that just started peaking at the right time. And it's a type of team that reminds you a lot of the Cornell teams of the past and the present. They don't get too high. They don't get too low. They just play their game. And the type of game that they played, slow, deliberate, spread you out, takes time off the clock. Cornell can play that game, but I thought they did a good job in neutralizing Cornell. You didn't see a lot of scramble situations, a lot of breakouts where C.J. Kirst is so deadly. So they kind of not fully shut down Cornell's offense, but they limited them to shots that their goalie could see. You know, there was some question about a freshman goalie for Michigan. I thought, you know, they played as fundamentally as good a game as you have to against a team like Cornell.
I think back to there was a stretch of about 26 minutes or so from around the 11-minute mark of the second quarter through the duration of the third quarter. Cornell just scored a pair of goals, and that was it. If you think Cornell could put together something like we saw late in the contest, do you think we're maybe chatting about a different story here and a different outcome? Because there were a lot of limited opportunities, and obviously, like I said, just 2 goals scored over almost 30 minutes of lacrosse at one point.
Well, you know, but part of that was dictated by Michigan.
Yeah.
So I see where you're going with that. It's easy to look back and say, yeah, that stretch. But, you know, at the same time, you know, Cornell had to come back from, what, 2 goals, you know, after the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. And, again, you know, it's a resilient group. Obviously, they played for a national championship, the majority of this group last year. But, yeah, it could have been a different difference. But, I just go back to Michigan, you know, just their discipline and their ability to neutralize Cornell on ground balls. That's a statistic. Again, I'll go back to what I said earlier, that it's called the George Boyardi stat, named after the late, great captain of the Big Red, George Boyardi, who epitomized the lunch bucket pail mentality of every ground ball is precious. Michigan got to more ground balls when they needed to. And again, their freshman goalie saw shots that the defense wanted him to see. So that, you know, can neutralize, you know, an offense like Cornell's. And like you said, what, two goals in a span of just under 30 minutes.
Barry Leonard with us here on BTL, the voice of the Cornell Big Red men's lacrosse team, as the season comes to a close after a first-round defeat to Michigan, 15-14 in overtime. Cornell finishes 11-4 on the season. And when you look back at those four losses, what's one key thing you look at and think to yourself, we saw this in all of the losses, or do you feel like all the losses were kind of different in their own right?
Well, you know, some of the games you can look back and one of their captains, Chase Erlin, would say, you know, I didn't see the ball well enough. I need to be locked in more. They talk about the Cornell lacrosse, the pride factor, the ability to be ready right from the opening whistle to hit the ground rolling, particularly, you know, certain games, Penn State. They didn't have the mindset needed in their minds collectively as a team to come in at home and host a school whose head coach spend a decade of excellence on the same sideline. Yeah. It's not, a reflection of Cornell and how the program performs. It's just that for that particular day, they didn't have the mindset to match Penn State in terms of their physicality and the way they wanted to play, which obviously was just a four-goal difference. But Penn State was held to 10 goals, and they still won. So you could say the offense had the day off. No, it's a number of factors. But each of these losses, from Connor Busick to the players down, they don't make excuses. And that's one thing you'll find out about this program. They hold themselves high, whether it's a win or a loss. And they'll go back to the fact that, yeah, maybe our goalie missed a few shots or we didn't have the number of face-off wins that we had, but collectively we win and lose as a team, and we didn't have that right mindset to come in. And keep in mind, you know, this is a club that is now looked at as not a rebuilding program, it's a reloading program, and there's a big difference from that. And there's going to be guys that are going to be thinking about yesterday's game for a long time on Mother's Day Sunday, but there'll be other guys that are coming into the program, guys in the program that are going to get their chance, Nick. And don't be surprised if Cornell is certainly back in the dance next season.
For sure. You've got a great gauge on the lacrosse landscape, no question. And I'm wondering what you think about CJ and his chances to be just one of the few guys to ever win a Tworeton over there on the Hill. You know, I thought for a lot of the season he would obviously be a finalist and maybe the favorite. Just a pair of goals and an assist yesterday, they really locked him down. I mean, do you think that sways anything? Do you think that hurts his chances? Do you still think that he's obviously got what it takes to maybe win this coveted award?
Well, you mentioned that unique class that he's in with Max Seabald and Rob Pinnell. That would be elite company, yeah, certainly in the halls of Cornell. But, you know, there's always politics involved with these awards. There's always been a Southern bias to the Eastern schools that they favor the South. I think college lacrosse has been so balanced, so exciting this year. It's interesting is that you have all attackmen as the five finalists for this. And I think, and I don't have any inside knowledge on this, I've talked to my broadcast partner, Howie Borkin, about it a lot since he goes to a lot of the coaches' conventions and he has his pulse on more of a daily basis. But you look at the five finalists, obviously you've got CJ with 84 total points, 65 goals. Tucker Durgovic, the Syracuse transfer, he's what, a grad student. He's got to be, I think, kind of in with Pat Cavanaugh of Notre Dame and Brennan O'Neill of Duke. Schellenberger of Virginia. You've got what? You've got Georgetown, Notre Dame, Duke, and Virginia all still playing. So those four guys still have an opportunity to impact their careers at their respective schools, and what better way to impress the committee? So it's a toss-up between the other four.
For sure. So it sounds like that early exit might influence things a little bit. I'll let you run after this one here. What are you going to miss most about this year's team, and also about some of the guys who are going to be going on to different things, because they've gone through a lot on this journey to get to this point?
What I'll miss, you know, particularly, like you said, the senior class, you know, seeing how they came in as precocious freshmen, a lot of them, no one even knew who Gavin Adler was coming to Cornell unless you followed high school lacrosse on Long Island. Yeah, he was an All-American in high school, but no one predicted he would turn into the top defenseman in the country. Chase Erland, just up the road in Victor, New York, can't say enough about him and his family. Those two guys obviously were bedrocks of this class. Billy Coyle, who went to the Hill School in Canada for a year before walking on at Cornell, just an incredible character kid and his family. I'll just miss the character and the way these kids held themselves day in and day out. Again, it's unlike any program I've ever been associated with. There have been some great individual years and runs, Cornell basketball, of course, and others, but a collective group to see this senior class over the last 4 to 5 years grow and mature into leaders and the types of people they are, that's what I'm going to miss most. Not the bus trips where you get home at 4:30 in the morning. I can count you on that.
I'd believe that in a heartbeat. Barry, as always, we really appreciate a couple of minutes here. Thanks so much for the time. Great season on your part with so many great calls, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Good to see you yesterday, Nick. Always a pleasure to be on.